Well, hey, this is your old friend Bill. Whenever I find myself in Davis, I'm busy putting the fun in fundraising. But when I'm not, I always listen to KDVS 90.3 FM. And you should too. Go Aggies!
This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
Welcome to Radio Parallax. We're pleased to let you know that we've stumbled on a great resource for you, the public. UC Davis has a news and information service. Its mission is to help the community at large locate knowledgeable sources on numerous topics. We're planning on using them in the future here on our public affairs show. And there is a lot of brain power out there at UCD. We've always known that. And they can help you, the public, understand numerous issues. The number of UC Davis's news service, if you want to seek them out on issues, is 530-752-1930. And they're on the web at www.news.ucdavis.edu. Today's show is going to deal mainly with a topic we've been working up to for some time, the media. We have two very special guests to help us examine this vital subject matter. Berkeley political scientist and author of 17 books, Dr. Michael Perini, will be joining us, as well as San Francisco ophthalmologic surgeon, Dr. Gary Aguilar, who has taken a special interest in government deception as practiced in recent decades. Now, some previews for the weeks to come. On next week's program, we're planning to talk current events, specifically the dangers of terrorism attacks on the U.S. We're all confused about this. We're all worried about this. What can we make out of all of this conflicting information being thrown out? We're going to try and help unravel some of that for next week's program. We anticipate some local experts to help us do that. And, stay tuned. That should be interesting. And I do want to make, by the way, one small criticism of UCD's news service. Their page on bioterrorism presents one authority who's claiming that smallpox is the real bioterror threat out there as opposed to, say, anthrax. We disagree with that, and I'm confident we will convince you otherwise. Now, the best thing I've seen yet on weapons of terror comes in an email that was sent in by Roger Peterson. Roger spoke on our show last October about Wyatt Earp and the gunfight at the OK Corral, and there's been an email, perhaps some of you have seen it, from, I guess it's Sergeant First Class Red Thomas, retired military man, which we're going to excerpt for you at length, because it's 3 pages of very practical, down-to-earth, and very reassuring information that I think you ought to have. 2 weeks from today, we're going to talk science. We're going to base much of our discussion on the very interesting book, The Botany of Desire, subtitled A Plant's Eye View of the World by Michael Pollan. This is a national bestseller and was brought to my attention by Amy Gardner, who is our researcher, Stuart Gardner's wife. And boy, what a good tip that was. We're going to discuss 2 important crops in particular out of the book, marijuana hemp and the potato, and recombinant DNA technology in agriculture, which features prominently in the book, particularly in discussing the potato, will be addressed on that program. Now, at UCD many moons ago, I took a course in the evolution of crop plants. And that's one reason I've always favored the quarter system, such as we have at UCD, because you're able to take smaller, sort of, you know, unusual classes like that. And I enjoyed that class very much, along with plant science and numerous other courses in biology and genetics. So we look forward to having a spirited discussion on this in 2 weeks. All right, let us take a brief digression into some lighter fare. We received an email from Jill on some memorable quotes that I think are worth sharing with you to help you, unwind after a hard day at work. All right, here's one from Paula Poundstone. My mom said she learned how to swim when someone took her out in the lake and threw her off a boat. I said, Mom, they weren't trying to teach you how to swim. One from a man named Richard Jenna. I don't know who Richard is, but he said, I think I know how Chicago got started. A bunch of people in New York said, gee, I'm enjoying the crime and poverty, but it just isn't cold enough. Let's go west. One from Dave Barry that is worth repeating. We told you this one a few months back, but if you haven't heard it, Dave Barry describing the difference between the sexes. Quote, if a woman has to choose between catching a fly ball and saving an infant's life, she will choose to save the infant's life without even considering if there's a man on base. All right, here's one from Warren Hutcherson. Remember in elementary school, you were told that in case of fire, you had to line up quietly in single file from the smallest to the tallest? Now, what's the logic in that? What, do tall people burn slower? All right, here's one from unknown, presumed deceased. Do you know why they call it PMS? Because mad cow disease was taken. Presumed deceased. All right, and the last one here from the immortal, Oscar Wilde. Bigamy is having one wife or husband too many. Monogamy is the same. Topic A today is the media. We're especially interested in the media, given the uncertainty of the national mood right now with an administration that's pushing a war that has only one-third of America's backing. And again, the media comes into play because I don't think most of us sort of think of it as one-third of America that's backing a war, but one-third of Americans back a war without allied support. The Chronicle showed a national poll last week revealing in its simple pie chart that 42% of the public opposes war against Iraq. 5% were not sure. 20% of the public favored a war only if we have the backing of allies. So if you're keeping tabs, that leaves 33%. Of that third, 5% favored war but weren't sure if we must have allied support. So just 28% of the public favors pursuit of a war without allied support. Now, Time magazine this week on the cover asks, do you want this war? Inside, it has a poll like that one shown in the Chronicle the week before. It also includes a pie chart, but Time's graphic did not break it down on the allies or no allies issue. It simply showed 54% for, 38% against, 8% uncertain. But next to that Time CNN chart, the numbers are broken down. And guess what? Again, you can see only 34% support a war without allies. So both these media outlets show that it's just one-third of the public supporting this war without our allies coming along. It just isn't so obvious in Time magazine that a majority does not support solo war. Now that is spin, and there's an awful lot of this going around. In this same Time magazine, the UN Security Council's breakdown is revealed, and I think that's probably worth talking about a bit because that seems unclear in, I think, most minds. It raises, really, the high probability the Bush administration is not going to get what it wants in terms of a green light. Now, there are five permanent members of the United Nations Security Council, the same allies who fought the Axis powers in World War II, the U.S., Russia, China, Great Britain, France. Any of them can veto a resolution calling for war, and France, Russia, and China are opposed. Now, even if all three should abstain from voting, the resolution still needs 9 votes to carry. There are 10 non-permanent members to contend with. Now, these non-permanent members serve rotating 2-year terms. 9 votes will be needed to pass a resolution among those 15 members, and so far, only Spain and Bulgaria are joining the U.S. and Britain. Germany is adamantly opposed, and so is Syria. Thus, pressure is being applied to somehow carry 5 of the 6 undecided non-permanent members. These are Mexico, Chile, Pakistan, Angola, Guinea, and Cameroon. Now, in this regard, it's interesting that Dr. Gary Aguilar, who'll be appearing on this show a little bit later, sent me an item from The Observer. The London paper published on March 2nd an article on a National Security Agency document that was leaked to them In it, Frank Coza, is the man's name, urges aggressive surveillance of members of the UN Security Council, specifically Chile, Angola, Guinea, Cameroon, and Pakistan. Now, despite the embarrassment of being caught urging more aggressive bugging of resistant UN members while they're being warned not to stand up to the U.S., this matter is, not getting a huge amount of play in the U.S. press. And this, again, is spin. By the way, when the Observer called the extension of Mr. Coza, when they were told, yes, this is his number. When they asked to talk to him about UN surveillance, the aide then said, oh, no, it was the wrong number after all. Now, White House spokesman Ari Fleischer apparently earned quite a laugh from reporters when he claimed that the Bush administration would not stoop to bribing countries to vote our way. Now, I heard that soundbite, but it gave no indication that he was being laughed at, and that, again, is spin. When we told you last week about the refusal of Viacom, one of the media giants we're going to talk about later in the program, to accept billboards carrying anti-war messages, even when the supporters had the cash to put them up, that's actually going beyond spin. That's just direct control of the flow of information. Most of you don't realize, perhaps, that the Fairness Doctrine was repealed back in the 1980s. This opened up the door for the sort of unabashedly one-sided news presentations as currently witnessed on Fox. And we may, by the way, devote an entire future segment to Fox News. Matters such as, you know, its role in the election 2000 are worthy of, review. But first, let's cite a media story specifically dealing with Fox that should do nothing to help you sleep soundly at night. Article dated February 21, 2003. Two TV reporters at a Florida Fox station were fired in 1998 for refusing to air a story that contained inaccurate and false information. The story was about Monsanto's growth hormone for cattle. This is a recombinant DNA hormone that boosts milk production. We'll talk about a little bit of that in 2 weeks, I think, in some detail. Now, Monsanto has used the courts to punish small milk producers who did not use the product and then labeled their milk accordingly. So to protect advertising revenue, Fox forced its reporters to disseminate false information in the story and fired them when they threatened to go to the FCC. Reporters Jane Aker and Steve Wilson, a married couple, sued. In 2000, Aker won $425,000 in a lawsuit for her termination using the claim that she was wrongfully fired as a whistleblower. The jury unanimously concluded that she was fired for threatening to report pressure to broadcast what was a, quote, false, distorted, or slanted, unquote, story on the growth hormone. But now, a Florida appeals court overturned the judgment by accepting the argument that Aker did not have a valid whistleblower claim. Now, how this goes down is interesting. Attorneys for Fox had argued unsuccessfully before three other judges that there is no law, rule, or regulation against deliberately lying or distorting news for a television broadcast. Three judges rejected that argument, but this appeals court bought it and overturned the case on that technicality. In Florida, to file a whistleblower claim, the employer misconduct must be a violation of a law, rule, or regulation. Fox argues that there is no real rule against deliberate distortion of the news. The FCC's position against news distortion is just a policy, they argued. Therefore, lying and distorting news violates no rule, no law, no regulation, and the reporters cannot sue as whistleblowers. Wilson and Aker are now contemplating an appeal to the Supreme Court of Florida, and let us hope this will not set legal precedent for this nation's case law. Now, I would add that that our legal consultant, Steve Alexander, says that in the state of California, we have a broader interpretation of the law, and they wouldn't have been able to overturn it. Nevertheless, I do hope that they appeal this case and that this that argument is thrown out of court. It should be considered a violation of a law, rule, or regulation to lie and distort the news. Now, on a slightly lighter note, I observed that Tonya Harding apparently had another boxing match about a week ago. She beat up somebody, I guess. Harding is now pursuing boxing as a career, having failed as a rival crippling Olympian, topless ice skater, and porno actress. The coverage that I saw in passing mentioned that that she had a fight with Paula Jones last year. Now, I'd paid just about zero attention to this, but it piqued my curiosity, and I went to go check this out, and I think this is a little bit of comedy relief regarding Fox. The review of this this epic bout last year, March 14th, 2002, appeared on Salon.com by King Kaufman, and I wanted to share an excerpt of that with you for Mr. Kaufman's fine writing. Former failed figure skater Tonya Harding combined minimal movement with perspicacious punching to score a third-round TKO over past political pawn Paula Jones Wednesday in a bout that signaled either a promising beginning for Fox Television's fledgling People You Never Wanted to See Again, Doing Things You Never Wanted to See Them Do division, or the end of civilization as we know it. Possibly both. On the undercard, Partridge Family tyke-turned-reform junkie Danny Bonaduce knocked out Barry Williams of Brady Bunch fame. Todd Bridges of What You Talkin' About renown scored a unanimous three-round decision over Rob You Thought I Was Lame When I Was Vanilla Ice Van Winkle. And mindless C-list celebrity entertainment beat shame, taste, and everything decent and good about sports in a walkover. This reporter, searching ringside for the usual glittering gaggle of stars, found only Satan and the giggling ghost of Morton Downey Jr. and Tony Danza, but that goes without saying. Harding, fresh off a bout with her landlord over unpaid rent, took a few light early shots from Jones. But as Harding began to land some punches, Jones turned her back on her opponent each time. Commentator and former lightweight champion Ray Boom Boom Mancini, answering the question, "Whatever happened to former lightweight champion Ray Boom Boom Mancini?" pointed out that this is not a good idea. All right, it goes on, citing that Harding won by a TKO at 53 seconds of the third round, which Kaufman concludes with, "She did really well," Harding said. "I knew that both of us would come in and get to know each other a little bit." This comment may have gone a long way in explaining Harding's repeated tussles with the law. She might just have an eccentric view of how people get to know each other. Perhaps when she threw a hubcap at her boyfriend 2 years ago, she was merely saying, "Howdy, partner." All right, when it comes to the news, sometimes you gotta laugh or you gotta cry. And that one's, I think that one's pretty good for a laugh. Okay, stay tuned in our upcoming segment for an interesting talk with Dr. Michael Perrini. Let's take a short break. You're listening to Radio Parallax on KDVS 90.3 FM. I'm Douglas Everett.